Skyline Studio.
WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good morning, and surprise, I'm not Rick Pearson. Amanda Vinicky, politics correspondent for WTTW-TV's Chicago Tonight, filling in for the Chicago Tribune's longtime ace political reporter, Rick Pearson, on the Sunday Spin, your weekly dive into the politics that shape our city, state, and country. As Rick would say, the coffee's on. Mine has been for a while. I'm still not sure it's completely working yet, but you get your caffeine jolt going. We do welcome your calls. The number is 312-981-7200. Once again, you can call 312-981-7200. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/The Sunday Spin. And then on Twitter, erase that, the handle simply Sunday Spin. I'll be trying to check it in between hosting this morning, where it looks as if the skies have cleared and a gorgeous view here from the Allstate studio at WGN Radio. Rick, by the way, being an awesome nephew, he's spending today celebrating an uncle's milestone birthday. So happy birthday to that uncle and happy birthday partying to Rick and the rest of that family. Now, Shwani and Bob, engineer here, Ro, producer. Good morning.
I know where the coffee is, so if you need extra coffee, I'm at your service.
Thank you, especially after this. So get ready. I don't have a birthday cake or candles with me or anything, but I did bring along.
Did you bring food?
I brought a breakfast treat. Yep.
Oh, I knew it.
It's homemade.
I knew it,
but not by me.
Oh, even better.
Not by me though. Which is for the best. That's how you want it. So, all right. This is a Chicago-made pie. And to be honest, I'm not really much of a pie person. I like my food to be smothered in hot sauce. And I haven't found a pie that really... I guess a pot pie could kind of do that. But regardless, I grabbed a sweet... I think it will be sweet pie. We will see. Maybe it'll be bitter. From one of Chicago's famed pie shops. This isn't an ad or anything, but just in case you're curious, it's from Hoosier Mama. Couldn't resist it.
I know Hoosier Mama.
Yeah, it's adorable. I went there for a savory pie, and they were out of it, sadly. What?
I love pie. Pie is great.
Oh, good. Okay, yeah. So you guys have to come on in here. All right, this is what I have. This pie is called the Chicago Sunrise. It's made of grapefruit and malort.
I'm in. Come on.
Yep. Everybody, just in case you're listening and you don't know, malort is available at any fine Chicago drinking establishment. It is a Swedish-style spirit. It's been Chicago-made, and it is basically liquid bitter. I mean, so here we go. Anybody, Bob, you want to try it with me? I've got a couple forks. I'm going to do it, guys.
Go for it.
You ready? All right. And maybe that'll be the... that work better than coffee. Here we go.
I'm waiting for the look on her face before I go in there.
It's...
Don't use the word interesting, please.
It is...
It's different.
Different. It is bitter still. Yeah. Oh, but... I was promised this, you know, in the bakery case.
I hope this is being recorded.
Oh, in the bakery case, it said, you gotta try it. It's great. And I gotta say, I actually like malort sometimes. Malort with grapefruit juice isn't bad. I'm not sure I can endorse the grapefruit juice and malort in pie version. Ooh, yeah. It's like custard gone wrong. But there's more left.
Will you be able to stay on until 9 o'clock this morning?
Yeah, I think I might need some of that coffee, please.
After that ringing endorsement.
I know where it is.
That ringing endorsement might make me stay right here in the sports.
No. You got to. I mean, it's not terrible. It's really not. I definitely would not buy it again. How's that? It's fun to try. It woke me up a little. I'm feeling like...
Oh, now you're ready to go.
Now I'm ready to go. Yeah. And the pie's also ready to go. So come and get it. Oh, yeah. Oh, I wanted, they had a bibimbap Korean short rib. That's what I wanted. And they were out of it. So I landed with this instead. Pies on my face, I guess. Huh?
Literally and figuratively, is that what we're talking about?
I'm looking at the monitor here right now. Not really.
I'm okay.
Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah, I'm fine. I recovered. I'm definitely not throw up worthy.
This is your second time, as I recall, being here in the Present Studios, right?
Yes, this is my second time here in the Present Studios. Second time hosting. I think I actually was also in once as a panelist or a guest or what have you.
Okay. But I knew you had been in for Rick at least one time before.
Yeah, I mean, for a man who never, ever takes a vacation off.
He really
doesn't. He is one of the hardest working reporters. This is my second time. And it is, I still miss and drive by the old Trib Tower and mourn a little bit.
You know, it won't be long.
You know, media prayer, but this is pretty gorgeous.
It won't be long until it's been a year since we've been here. Next month.
Yeah, it's coming.
You're going to get one of those condos, right, guys?
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah.
I'm going to go sell some pies on the street to afford it.
Good luck with that. Yeah.
I'm going to play a duet with Johnny Six Note, Rick's favorite musician out there.
Yeah, I wish. Maybe we could all go in on it together.
There you go, like a timeshare condo situation.
Yeah, I like it.
And
like
choose
it.
One that was on the 11th, or rather the 7th floor, where the station was.
That's the thing. I feel bad for people that are going to be get condos on that 7th floor. There's a lot of stuff that went on in that building, you know?
Yeah. Care to share?
Well, you know, just, you know, sportscast, feed up on the air. You know, various food items, you know, things of that nature.
We like people to tell their stories. We don't want to tell ours.
Good point. So the walls
there might be
just
some 2-year-old pizza left over in some corner in there.
All right. Well, speaking of stories, guys, coming up is your spin through the week in national news. And after 7:30, we're going to have Democratic State Representative Ann Williams returning, bringing a state focus to the abortion debate that's been brewing nationally. And then later, we're going to move the focus over to City Hall as Chicago is set to get a new mayor tomorrow, with veteran CBS political producer Ed Marshall joining at 8 and closing out the show this morning. The CEO of one of the giants in the fantasy sports world coming to the studio to talk about Springfield's sports betting battle. All of that is on the docket on this Sunday Spin. Good morning, Amanda Vinicky back with WGN Radio 720, the Sunday Spin, Chicago's very own 720 WGN Radio, WGNRadio.com. And another week, another Democrat running for president. Actually, make that 2. And more immigration ideas and press bashing talk from the current president. Trade war, maybe actual war brewing, and abortion policies roil the country. It's the Sunday Spin's weekly spin through the week in politics. Now, it's true that often the bigger the better, such is the case when it comes to, well, pieces of birthday cake, pie, if it's not boozy Malort pie, paychecks. But does the axiom hold up when it comes to contenders for the presidency? The field of Democrats vying to take on President Donald Trump in the 2020 election has now expanded to 23. Tuesday, Montana Governor Steve Bullock, who won re-election in 2016, even as Trump took the state by 20 points, put his name in the ring.
Look, to be honest, I never thought I'd be running for president. Raised by a single mom, we struggled just to get by. I only knew there was a governor's house in town because I delivered newspapers to it. Now my wife Lisa and I are raising our kids in that same house. I believe in an America where every child has a fair shot to do better than their parents. But we all know that that kind of opportunity no longer exists for most people. For far too many, it never has. That's why we need to defeat Donald Trump in 2020.
And Bullock, who touts campaign finance laws passed in Montana, says he's running to take on a corrupt system that lets campaign finance drown out the people's voice. But as a late entry without widespread national name recognition, is he going to have the money and the ability to compete?
There's plenty of money in this world. There's plenty of money in this country. It's just in the wrong hand.
That's New York Mayor Bill de Blasio, who also announced his bid this week with this video. The announcement didn't go quite as planned. A high school junior from St. Louis broke the news a day earlier after some Facebook sleuthing. Score one for social media, score two for student journalists. De Blasio's running on his record of raising the minimum wage in the Big Apple.
As president, I will take on the wealthy. I will take on the big corporations. I will not rest until this government serves working people. As mayor of the largest city in America, I've done just that.
De Blasio for president, guys.
Donald Trump must be stopped. I've beaten him before, and I will do it again.
But here in Sweet Home Chicago, it was another mayor and candidate for president who made a splash. South Bend, Indiana's Mayor Pete Buttigieg was in town for fundraisers and for a speech at the City Club of Chicago.
And it's great to be back here in what really amounts to spectacular weather by our Midwestern standards. And as you know, I'm from South Bend, Indiana. You get on Lakeshore Drive and pick up I-90 about an hour and a half later. You're in our hometown.
Sunday Spin host Rick Pearson and I were both there to cover that speech. WTTW's got the full speech up if you want to hear it, because that talk covered a lot, everything from local politics, South Bend and Chicago, to international affairs, climate change, even how the next president should be chosen.
And from Idaho, whether you live in a rather blue state or a rather red one, at risk of sounding simplistic, one thing that would be fitting for a democracy when it chooses its national leader is to elect the president by just counting up all the votes and then giving it to whoever in the office.
The current occupant of the White House, of course, lost the popular vote in 2016. President Donald Trump was elected on a platform that took a hard line on immigration, including his promise to build a wall on the country's southern border. The first hearing was held Friday in federal court on the legality of Trump's declaration of a national emergency, such that money could be diverted from the Pentagon to build that wall. The Washington Post this week out with a report that Trump has been intimately involved in talks about the wall's design, with ideas like painting it black so it would be too hot for immigrants to climb in hot and sunny weather. Now, beyond the wall, Trump unveiling his proposal to overhaul the immigration system in a way that he describes as fair and modern.
If adopted, our plan will transform America's immigration system into the pride of our nation and the envy of the modern world. Our proposal builds upon our nation's rich history of immigration while strengthening the bonds of citizenship that bind us together as a national family.
Trump wants to swap today's system, which he called completely dysfunctional, for one that puts more emphasis on merit, a description that critics say is offensive. Rather than issue green cards based on a random lottery or preference to immigrants with relatives already living in the USA, Trump wants priority given to would-be residents who score highest based on factors like ability to speak English, education, age. The plan does not touch on what to do about immigrants already living in the U.S. illegally, including Dreamers who were just kids when they came to America. Meanwhile, Trump escalating tensions with China over trade. China met Trump's increased tariffs on some $200 billion of imported Chinese goods with higher tariffs on American goods. I interviewed trade economist Phil Levy with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs about it for Chicago Tonight. He says Trump doesn't have many appealing options going forward. He says trade war is going to hurt China, but also the United States.
We're very familiar with the fact that many of the things we get at Walmart or other retail stores are coming in our sneakers or kids' underwear. This is coming from China. It's also true that you've got a lot of American manufacturers where there are Chinese parts that help make them competitive. When those go up in price, our American goods get to be less competitive in the world.
Markets are watching. Tensions also simmering with Iran. Listen carefully as reporters ask President Trump about it.
Mr. President, are we going to war with Iran?
In case you couldn't make that out, Mr. President, are we going to war with Iran? The reporter asks. I hope not, the president responds. Reports out of Washington say some of the president's most hawkish advisors are pushing for a military confrontation. Others, including the Secretary of State, advising against it. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
And the responsibility in the Constitution is for Congress to declare war. So I hope that the president's advisors recognize that they have no authorization to go forward in any way. They cannot call the authorization, AUMF, the Authorization for the Use of Military Force that was passed in 2001 as any authorization to go forward in the Middle East now.
But perhaps the issue that captured the most headlines this week, abortion. The issue's in the spotlight as Alabama's governor signed a law tantamount to a ban on the procedure, where the only exception is if a woman's health is in danger. President of the Alabama Pro-Life Coalition, Eric Johnston, helped to write that law. He says it is designed to test Roe versus Wade.
That we want to stop abortion of unborn children, and the only way we can do that is to go back and revisit the Roe decision. So this law is, in effect, a vehicle to do that. But the real purpose of this law is to save the lives of unborn children.
It's not just Alabama. Other states, including Illinois' neighbor Missouri, also passing strict restrictions on abortions. Illinois could be going in the opposite direction. We'll get the other side of that issue with our first guest on the Sunday Spin coming up in just a couple minutes. Other big headlines this week. The Treasury Department refused a congressional subpoena for Trump's tax records. Actress Felicity Huffman pleaded guilty in the college admissions scandal, admitting she paid someone to correct incorrect answers on her daughter's SAT. Changes are coming to that standardized test. The SAT is adding what's been dubbed an adversity score that takes into account the crime rate and local poverty level of a student's neighborhood. And that has been your weekly spin through the week in national politics.
Now the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Nope. Amanda Vinicky in the host chair dancing today. Does Rick ever do that? Sometimes, but engineer Bob says sometimes we get dancing from Pearson. Anyway, welcome back to the Sunday Spin. Remember, you can always give us a call, post some questions, give us some insight. The number 312-981-7200. Once again, 312-981-7200. We also are on Twitter and on Facebook. You can give me an at anybody. Also, State Representative Ann Williams, the first guest. She's popular here on the Sunday Spin. Welcome back. She was on, actually, I think just last week. She's a Democrat who served her Chicago district since 2011. One of some 74 Democrats in the Illinois House, including a brand new Democratic legislator. That's because former State Representative Melissa Conyers Irvin resigned because tomorrow she'll be sworn in as Chicago's treasurer. Her replacement, Alderman Walter Burnett's son. And yes, Representative Omar Williams is joining the General Assembly with the help and thanks to his dad. It's a busy time, less than 2 weeks left of the spring session, and the agenda is full. Thanks so much, Representative Williams, for joining us to talk about it.
Good morning, Amanda. Thanks so much for having me today.
So as we talked about, abortion has been getting a lot of attention nationally, in part because of what's going on in states down south, Alabama and Georgia, but also Illinois' neighbor, Missouri. Illinois instead is looking to go in the opposite direction. Describe the legislation that is right now actually stalled in the General Assembly.
Well, the bill we're talking about is the Illinois Reproductive Health Act. And what the bill does primarily is to restore or eliminate all the provisions in the law that have been pending in the compiled statutes since the early 70s that pertain to abortion. And these are things that were passed at that time, have been enjoined by the courts over the years, and are things that if Roe versus Wade were to fall, would be revived, and that is something we don't want to see. They include items like spousal consent, for abortion services. They include some criminalization procedures, relevant to performing and undergoing abortion, things like that. So a lot of antiquated stuff still on the books from the 70s, Amanda, and our goal is to make sure that that is not law in Illinois when Roe versus Wade is overturned.
And
it also provides...
I was going to say, there's also an insurance component, right?
There is. And it also, the kind of the biggie for me is it kind of requires us to shift how we think about abortion and think about abortion not as something that should be considered within the criminal statutes, but something that is a healthcare issue, something between a woman and her physician. And that, I think, is really where we need to go when it comes to discussing this issue.
So Democrats, this is, of course, clearly not a strictly partisan issue, though oftentimes it is seen through that lens. Democrats hold supermajorities, hold the governor's office. J.B. Pritzker has been very clear, the governor Pritzker, that is, about his position that aligns with yours when it comes to abortion. So why haven't we seen this bill move?
I think this issue is one that is widely misunderstood, even in the pro-choice community. The antis have gotten out in front of a lot of these issues and spread messaging that's simply not true. A lot of the conversation surrounding late-term abortion, for example, is inflammatory, it's not medically accurate, and it's used to scare people away from these sorts of bills. The reality is abortion is a healthcare procedure. It is something that is important for women to deal with between their physicians. It's not something politicians should be weighing in on. And that's the, you know, current thinking of the medical community. It's not the current thinking of the anti-choice community, whose goal is to completely eliminate access to abortion. The reality is the bills that are passed disproportionately impact women of color, low-income women, and women, younger women. So it's about a lot more than what it should be about medical care for women. I will note, though, one point about, you mentioned about abortion not being a partisan issue. Illinois used to have a fairly big contingent of Republican members who were pro-choice. Over time, that has dwindled. And right now, I don't believe there are any Republican members who are pro-choice.
It's part of a larger shift, really. I mean, that's not just on the abortion issue, but the changing demographics as you have more Democrats sweeping in the suburbs, and yet particularly in downstate Illinois, more districts going and turning to Republicans. Are you losing moderates on both sides? And is that going to cause issues in Illinois on a whole spectrum of policy matters?
I think you're exactly right there. I think we are losing that moderate, middle-of-the-road voice. And I think that we're seeing that on the federal level as well as locally. Even on the city council, I think we've seen the shift to the more to the extreme views. So I think you're right. I think that deters opportunities to collaborate. But, you know, of course, on the issue of reproductive health care, there's not a lot of room for collaboration or compromise. It's a black and white issue for women, and it's a black and white issue for me.
So is this bill going to fly this session?
I am doing everything in my power, along with many of my pro-choice colleagues, to make sure that happens. It's literally every day. I read the news, get up in the morning, check my news sources, and there's some new horrific extreme legislation passed in a state like Georgia, Alabama, Kentucky, Indiana, Ohio. This goes on and on. It's very disturbing personally as well as professionally, and there's been a resurgence of efforts, I think you've probably noticed, on the state level in the state house to really push and amplify this issue so the bill gets called before the end of May.
There certainly has been, to be clear, I'm not going to take a position on this one either way, merely discussing it. But I just want to kind of re-ask, because while you said that it seems as if those who are against this and want to keep restrictions that are currently set within the courts in place that are against this legislation moving, Democrats have like all the power to kind of do whatever they want. So who's holding this up? Is it there are those who suggest it's the House Speaker? Is it just how is it that this has not progressed while we just have 2 weeks left before the session adjourns, particularly given what's happening nationally.
Sure. In my experience, the speaker responds to members when it comes to prioritizing issues. So when and if, and I hope the answer is when, he hears from a critical mass of us how important this issue is, it will move. What a lot of us have been saying over the past few weeks is that the reason we have such a strong Democratic majority, the reason we've swept so many of the seats in the suburbs is based on the issue of reproductive freedom, other issues like that, gun safety, et cetera. And women were the ones that came out to vote and made it clear that these issues were a priority for them. So in my opinion, the message has already been sent by Illinois women that this is a priority, and we need to make sure that our legislators hear that message, pass it on to their leaders, and get this bill called. It's the message has been sent. We now need to do the work and move it forward.
We're going to talk about what is coming up otherwise in Springfield in just a moment. We've got a break. Back the Sunday Spin with some Backstreet Boys. You just heard there the 20th anniversary edition of I Want It That Way, which the boys came out with, like I said, 20 years ago. This new version they just came out with this week. What do you think, Representative Williams? Controversial issues of the day.
Wow. You know what? I didn't know you were such a fan, but
I'm more of a New Kids girl, truth be told, but I try and, you know, work our bumper music and get news in at every which turn, and keeping our listeners informed.
It's a nice tone to set for a Sunday morning. Thank you.
Waking everybody up. All right. So we talked about the abortion legislation. Yeah. Let's move on to, because there's so much still ahead for the spring session. Always budget time, but this time it's a budget that is predicated on, frankly, a whole lot of new revenue, potentially an infrastructure program supported by also more new taxes and fees. Also, a constitutional amendment still ahead. So a lot of ground to cover there. In general, can you speak to, I saw a quote actually from a Rick Pearson story. He quoted House Republican leader Jim Durkin saying, there's a common theme among rank and file members and people in the Capitol, and that is, how are we going to land this ship? With so much still to go, you guys going to get this all done?
You know, that's a good question. It's only about 2 weeks out, and there are a lot of very heavy issues, as you mentioned, on the table, still pending. I've been around a little bit, both as a legislator and prior, and I don't think I remember a session that had quite so many big, heavy issues unresolved at this point in time. However, I will remind you, as you know, that 2 weeks in, you know, any other setting seems like not much time, but in the legislative world, that can a lot can be accomplished in 2 weeks. And, you know, we tend to wait till the last minute to get everything in order. So I do feel optimistic that under the leadership of Governor Pritzker, we will move forward with maybe not all, but a substantial portion of the issues that are pending right now. I've been thrilled to see us consider the budget as it should be, weigh all the issues together in the Appropriations Committee, vet programming, really evaluate things in terms of their cost-benefit analysis. That's how the budgeting is supposed to work. And I've seen that happening this year for the first time in several years. So I think for the, you know, citizens of Illinois, we're working hard and trying to do the right thing in terms of budgeting.
So,
but yeah, you're right. There's a lot going on.
There's so much. So let's talk about, for starters, the constitutional amendment that would allow for Illinois to tax at a graduated rate such that depending on your income level, you would pay perhaps more or less of a rate to the state. That's due for a House hearing. But so is attached legislation that would actually set those rates. Are you ready to vote for both of those?
I'm still exploring those bills specifically. I do support Illinois going to a graduated income tax rate. Right now, I think we're one of five, maybe six states that still utilizes an antiquated flat tax system. It's not a progressive approach to taxation. It's not fair. And I definitely think we need to move toward a graduated income tax.
So why not ready to say yes yet?
Well, you know, I'm feeling positive about that piece. I think the voters of Illinois deserve the opportunity to weigh in on that. So I'm feeling good about putting it on the ballot. What I'm less comfortable with is how we're going to structure the rate. That is still under discussion. It's my understanding that we may or may not have the exact same bill considered in the House that passed the Senate. I know that's something that is being discussed right now. But one of my priorities, and I've heard this from a lot of my colleagues, is to ensure that should we offer the citizens of Illinois the opportunity to elect to do to install a graduated income tax rate, that we make sure that we include in there things that are going to mitigate the impacts on Illinois families. For example, we should include property tax reform. That's a burden that we hear no matter what community you live in. You're impacted by rising property taxes. That's not something that we control at the state level, but we can take steps to mitigate that. So that's a priority in my area, as well as many other areas of the city and suburbs, frankly, and downstate even.
All right. And also, the Senate version eliminated the estate tax. Does that help make this more palatable?
I'm still exploring how that will impact the community that I represent and whether in the big picture it's a good idea. I think one of the important things we're doing now that has not been done in the past 4 years under Governor Rauner is exploring these issues as a package. Using a piecemeal approach for revenue to, for any issue really is not healthy and not in the best interest of our state. That's what's been happening for far too long. Issue of paying down debt, funding critical human services, those all have to be considered as part of a larger conversation about budget and taxation. That's the only way we're going to end up with a responsible budget, responsible source of revenue, sources of revenue that are going to lead us to a balanced approach and restore Illinois fiscally. Put us back in a place of stability. And, you know, we're not in a place of stability. Like it or not, former Governor Rauner did raise taxes just by creating that, like, the billions of dollars of debt that were added due to the budget impact. You know, it's like running up your credit card and then forgetting that you have to pay for it. The person that running the credit card, you've got to pay those debts. And just like Illinois, we, during the impasse, ran up billions of dollars of debt.
Billions of debt upon debt that had already been incurred throughout many years, particularly when it comes to pensions and in general, just late paying the bills and building up the backlog. So as you noted, you want this to be part of a bigger conversation about taxation. We have now an outline of what the governor is backing to pay for a large public works program. And so we have, first of all, a budget that would, as recommended by the governor, increase or set a statewide tax on plastic bags, similar to what Chicago already has, increase the tax on cigarettes and get a new tax on e-cigarettes. And now the public works program that would be funded by higher taxes on alcohol. So Malort there, Malort pie. I don't know if that's included. satellite TV and streaming services. Also doubling the gas tax and increasing the fee for vehicle registration, particularly for those who drive electric cars. That is a whole lot of tax votes. Are you going to be able to vote for all of those? And if not, how do you pay for a public works program in a budget that has some efficiencies maybe, but not a whole lot of cuts?
Yeah, well, I think when you evaluate what's in the capital bill, it's important to note that a lot of these things have been deferred for many, many years. I was glancing yesterday at the kind of breakup of the categories that we have in the capital program. The vast majority of expenditures are going to be for what they call horizontal projects, which, of course, are transportation and road projects. Those are bridges, roads, the classic stuff, which we have really neglected in Illinois.
When you're cursing the potholes, scared to cross a bridge, that's what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. I've been, playing dodge the pothole the whole session on the way down to Springfield. But those are important considerations that, we're not paying for what we need now. We're paying for what we need now and what we've needed for the past 20 years or more. So putting this off is really going to require us to make some hard decisions. There's a few things in there that I think, again, looking at the big picture, the electric, when Rick asked me about this last week, the electric vehicle fee is, in my opinion, too high. I have a goal right now that would encourage the utilization of electric cars by fleets, but also by individuals. You know, we shouldn't sacrifice our environmental efforts for a couple bucks here and there. So that's something I'd be concerned about. But, you know, the plastic bag tax, for example, that's a tax. It's a relatively small amount of revenue, but I'm sponsoring a standalone bill to do just that in the House. That's something that we need to do. If you buy your groceries at the Jewel in my neighborhood in North Center, everybody's got the bags. If you don't, you feel pretty guilty. You look around, make sure nobody sees you using that plastic bag, or you buy a paper bag, or you put it in your
My pants, handbag you know. Has about three bags in it at all points in time.
Right? I do the same. But, you know, I shopped in Springfield during a long session, and you don't see the same usage. So it really does impact behavior. So those seem to me like no-brainers.
A lot of big votes come in. I want to make sure we've got to head to a break, but I want to get you just real quick. The marijuana legalization, are you for that as proposed now? I know that's another one that's still being negotiated some.
Of course, I want to see what's in the final package, but the vast majority of my constituents, and actually the vast majority of Illinoisans, do support recreational cannabis. So I will likely be voting in support of that unless something changes drastically.
And we'll have to leave it at that. Thanks so much once again to Representative Ann Williams.
Have a great weekend.
You too. Again, this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNradio.com.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Amanda Vinicky subbing in for Rick Pearson this morning on the Sunday Spin. You know, here's the thing about political journalism. Some days are crazy busy. You run from press conference to a committee, file a story in between, rush off to the next event. And other days, there's a lot of downtime. I'm not saying resting time, mind you. It's more waiting for politicians, for newsmakers to get out of a meeting. So a bunch of reporters spending sometimes hours waiting for these newsmakers to come out and tell us what is going on. That is in part how I have had the pleasure of getting to know CBS TV political producer Ed Marshall. Stakeouts, political conventions, press conferences, when he never fails to get in an insightful, probing question. Unfortunately for Chicago, Ed is retiring, so good for him. But before Chicago journalism loses a whole lot of institutional knowledge, wanting to spend the next half hour or so looking back with Ed on that long career covering city politics. Welcome to the Sunday Spin, Ed.
Thanks, Amanda, although I'm glad I'm not in studio because I don't think I would have enjoyed that pie thing you guys had.
Yeah, I still have a lingering bitter taste on my tongue. Yeah, it's bad when you prefer the liquor to the pie. Although Who's Your Mama does a great job otherwise. Anyway, thanks for calling in. Ed, sure. How long have you been covering politics in Chicago?
Well, I got hooked on politics in about 1979 when I began as a reporter at the City News Bureau, and my first assignment was on a Sunday, and I was sent to Bridgeport to cover Jane Byrne, who was campaigning for mayor, and that was it. I got hooked. So that was 1979, so that was quite a while ago. I wound up with a desk in the City Hall press room covering Jane Byrne, and that's when I met Fran Spielman and, of course, Bob Davis and Harry Golden. And I really learned a lot about how to be a political reporter from being in that environment. And even though we didn't have social media back then, you were constantly trying to scoop the competition because there were sometimes three and four different versions of the newspaper printed every day. And so, for example, I might walk through the lobby of City Hall and strike up a conversation with Mayor Byrne on her way from her limousine to the fifth floor, and she'd give me a scoop. And I'd phone that into my bosses at City News. It would hit the wires, and then that would wind up in the newspapers. You can't do that now, of course, because the mayor's got four, five, six, seven police officers around him or her. But back then it was a lot easier than it is now. And I've enjoyed every minute of covering politics in Illinois and in Chicago, and I'm going to miss it.
Wow, I envy the ability to just approach an elected official like that. It's still very much the case, I think, with legislators, aldermen, but very much not so with the mayor, the governor, or any other constitutional officer. It's tough to, it seems, get a, even try as you might, to get anything that isn't calculated for political reasons. It doesn't matter the party, doesn't matter the person. That's really tough these days.
Yeah, and I remember not that long ago, before we got to the 24-hour news cycle, and politicians always felt that they had to be on their guard. Jim Thompson, when he was governor, would routinely hold informal press conferences with one or two or three reporters in a hallway. And there were no bodyguards. There was no press secretary. And it was all very informal. It was all very cordial, if not friendly. And, of course, Amanda, you know from covering so many governors that it is a constant spin cycle. And, for example, with Bruce Rauner, you never felt that you had a minute where he would let his guard down. He always seemed wary. He was afraid, I think, of being misquoted, whereas with Blagojevich, oftentimes he was so scripted that you couldn't get him to not speak, you know.
It was like a campaign commercial at all points in time.
Every time he spoke with him, and in fact, he couldn't get him to turn off. So things have certainly changed in Springfield. I hope that at some point it comes back to that. I do think that as we look tonight to the inauguration tomorrow, we're going to have a mayor in Lori Lightfoot who is so unusual, so unscripted, and so confident of herself that at least up until now, she has been open and warm and not guarded with the press and seems content to literally answer the questions that she's asked, which, as you know, is very rare.
Right. We all, it's incredible how much feedback I get when I do interviews and people say they didn't answer the question. You say, yeah, I know. I tried. And sometimes when you have only 10 minutes, which is often what we get with the highest level elected officials, if you're even given an opportunity for an exclusive interview or for a one on one, it's 10 minutes and that's it. So you can either choose to spend those 10 minutes repeating the same question ad nauseum and likely getting the same answer, or saying, and this is sometimes actually my approach, I'll say, all right, you're not going to answer that question. We'll move on and make it clear that that's what's going on. So we all recognize what's out there. You know, Ed, you said something about Lori Lightfoot in that she is so confident of her position. Obviously, she sailed to victory in this election without any sort of, quote, machine help, instead running against the machine. I have been hearing some talk already before she's inaugurated. Is she too confident? Is she going in without recognition that you need to bridge some alliances, play the game some if you want to push your agenda through?
Well, if you look at what she did Friday, it was stunning. She pretty much eviscerated longtime alderman Tony Beal and took away his, at least on paper, his committeeship, and installed a whole group of nominal progressives along with some mainstream Democrats to a newly reorganized city council that removes a number of players like Kerry Austin and others who've come up through the machine. There's no doubt in my mind that her first job is to take on city council head on. For example, you went through her 102-page transition report, and one of the chapters dealt with city council, in which she said, quote, "This is a city of fiefdoms, backroom deals, and corruption. We've got to leave behind a system shrouded in secrecy. We've got to move away from a structure that encourages corruption." I mean, when you hear that, that's a direct challenge to the day-to-day operations of city council. And here she goes, in her first 100 days, she intends to reduce the number of city council committees, require monthly meetings, prevent aldermen from having any outside work, and live stream all committee meetings.
But she needs the aldermen to get that done.
I'll be amazed if she pulls this off. She's got a mandate. She won all 50 wards. She'll be able to say that to her detractors in council. But as you know, that is a lot to ask for in the first 100 days, as we all saw with Harold Washington. The forces were out to get him from day one, and so he was essentially tied up like a pretzel in council for pretty much all of his first term. I don't know if that's going to happen here. We've got a different time. We've got a different feeling in the city. It was a change election that tossed out so many incumbents. When we saw Mayor Emanuel's floor leader, Pat O'Connor, get tossed on his butt, that was a real sign that this was a change election. And so she's got a shot. She has a legitimate – Lori's got a legitimate shot to reorganize council in her vision, which is, you know, putting reformer Seth Waggus back at finance, which is unheard of because you're still going to have Ed Burke, the longtime finance committee chairman, still the 14th Ward alderman. So he'll be in the meetings. It'll be like theater, won't it?
Oh, will it ever. Think about that. We're going to get back in just a moment to talk more about Alderman Ed Burke and the reigning controversy after this.
K-Sera, Sera, whatever will be, will be. The future's not ours to see. K-Sera, Sera, what will be, will be. When I grew up.
There we go. That was, of course, an homage to Doris Day, who passed away this week. This is the Sunday Spin. Amanda Vinicky filling in for Rick Pearson. Que sera, sera. Perhaps an attitude that we journalists need to take. We follow the news. We don't make it. We try to help you decipher it. And you, I suppose, listeners, voters, have the ability to take in the info we share with you and use it wisely come election time. Here to join me to talk about it, Ed Marshall. He is a longtime political producer, CBS TV. Remember, this is your opportunity to give us a call, 312-981-7200. Again, 312-981-7200. Or you can write us on Twitter. You can text that number, I should actually add. Reach us on Facebook and throw any questions Ed's way before he takes off on his Harley and retires. So, Ed, you mentioned Alderman Ed Burke, who will continue to remain the longest serving alderman in Chicago City Council, despite having a couple of challengers. He pretty easily was able to retain his seat, even as now the new mayor basically ran against him and the machine. I'm curious, when you have an alderman who is under federal investigation, a criminal complaint filed, we're waiting, there's no actual indictment, but hearing, expecting that one will be coming after Memorial Day against Ed Burke. How does somebody like that get elected? Is this just the Chicago way? Is Chicago politics different than elsewhere?
Well, it's called the incumbent protection plan. What you do is you will become one of the most powerful machine Democrats in the last 50 years by providing favors to people near and far. You help create judgeships. You help create Supreme Court judgeships. You run that process. You groom people through your finance committee and allow them to flourish in the private sector and the public sector. And the next thing you know, you've got friends everywhere. And I think that's what's happened with Ed Burke over the years. Of course, he's created his own mini machine out there in the 14th Ward. And even though the bulk of that district is now Mexican-American, I went out there and talked to voters before the election because I wanted to know how they felt about the alderman, even though they knew he was facing corruption charges. And he's still popular because he makes sure that the streets are clean. He makes sure that if a tree falls down, it's picked up right away. He's got great constituent services. So all of those things come into play. But this will all change when he's indicted. And I've been told by people I know who are familiar with the case that he will be indicted. It's going to happen sometime in June. And once that happens, he can't serve anymore. Once you face a federal indictment, you can't sit in council anymore. So that effectively will make him toxic. Now, when you take a look at the document that's still available for listeners if they want to read it, I believe it's you can find it on the Tribune website. It's also on the Internet. This is the federal request for the search warrant that was when they first you knew they were targeting Ed Burke. And it's about 90 pages long. But when you read it, it's clear that he was not the original target. Mr. Michael J. Madigan, the House Speaker, was the original target of this investigation. And Eddie Burke was picked up as an incidental through Alderman Solis, the former 25th Ward Alderman who wore the wire, as you well know. So I would say that this summer is going to prove to be some of the most dramatic political changes in Chicago that we've ever seen, particularly when we begin with the first city council meeting on the 29th of May. You'll see Eddie Burke in there in his three-piece suit and his badge and his pocket watch. And
the fedora will be off, but he'll have worn it into the building.
So I think that anybody who's involved in politics or anybody who's covering politics for the news media in Chicago should find a way to get into that May 29th meeting to watch history being made as Lightfoot presides over her first meeting. Will we see a revolt emerge that day in council? Because she's clearly decided that she's going to get rid of as much corruption that she has control of in city council. And as you know, it's where the bodies are placed. So in other words, all throughout city government, there are thousands and thousands of people who got their jobs through nepotism and through clout.
We just saw, for example, again, I mean, legally, it's not necessarily something that is done on, I guess we don't have to call it the up and up, but there can be backroom doors dealings. We just saw, again, I mentioned it earlier, Alderman Burnett playing a role in helping his stepson get a job with the General Assembly, become a state legislator.
Right. But I think the key here, as we watch the beginning of the Lightfoot administration unfold, is all of these employees who've gotten their positions largely through the influence of either Alderman Burke or Speaker Madigan, their allegiance is to them. Their allegiance is not to Mayor Lightfoot. And you can't just oust these people from their jobs. They've got protections. They may be doing a good job for the city. But their allegiance is not to Lori Lightfoot. So that's where we're going to see the conflict and the tension.
Is despite when some any of these sort
people
of mandate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, deputy commissioners in Streets and Sand, people who may work at the CTA in key positions. I mean, I think you may have been there when Mayor Emanuel held that little off-the-record session and said that one of the reasons he didn't go after Ed Burke in his first term was he was afraid that if he came out too strong, Burke had so much control, he could actually stop snow plows from plowing snow because he placed so many people in Streets and Sand. So that is a real concern for Lori Lightfoot.
He'd be done before he even began. That's the concern with the Lightfoot administration.
Exactly.
You know, Ed, we've got to run to a break in just a bit, but I wanted to make sure, again, as you are retiring, and once again, congratulations on that. Do you have a quick favorite story, something that's emblematic of politics in Chicago and Illinois that you can share with us?
Well, I do, and it comes from when I was in politics myself. I took a four-year break. I had worked about 14 years at CBS, and then I took a break and went into politics myself, and I was a communications director for the Illinois Republican controller, Lolita Didrikson, who went on to run for the U.S. Senate. But in any event, at that time, she was very ambitious, and she was interested in running either for governor or for secretary of state, and George Ryan was in the way. And he didn't want that to happen. And so there was a meeting I attended in which George offered to come up with all the money for Lolita to run for the U.S. Senate if she got out of the way so he could run for governor. And that's exactly what happened. She wound up running in the primary. She ran the primary against Peter Fitzgerald. Peter ran a better campaign and beat us. And I'll never forget sitting in that meeting where it was just George Ryan, Scott Faywell, myself, and Lolita. And it was just an old-fashioned deal. I'll raise $600,000 for you if you get out of my way.
Deals, deals, deals. There are so many of them. I look forward to speaking with you more about it off the radio one of these days. Again, my congratulations. Thanks so much, Ed Marshall, for joining us this morning on the Sunday Spin.
Thanks, Amanda. Really enjoyed it.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good morning, our final half hour together. So this is your opportunity to give us a call. You guys have been quiet this morning, but the lines are still open for you to phone or to text 312-981-7200. Once again, 312-981-7200. On Twitter, the handle is @SundaySpin, or on Facebook, it's facebook.com/TheSundaySpin. Amanda Vinicky in for Rick Pearson today. And last but not least, we have in studio Matt King. He's the CEO of FanDuel, one of the giants in the daily fantasy sports business. Talking to him because one of the ways that Springfield's looking to bolster revenue for the budget legalizing betting on sports. A U.S. Supreme Court opinion lifted restrictions that previously prevented states from doing this, and Illinois is looking to get in on that action. And so are companies, including FanDuel. So, Matt, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
For just in case, those listeners, including presumably my mother, who does not know what daily fantasy sports is, what is the genre?
So we're best known for our daily fantasy sports business. Daily fantasy sports is effectively a shortened version of season-long fantasy sports. So everybody typically has friends during football season where they'll do a draft together. It's a very social game. Typically, people will put a couple bucks in up front and then get paid out at the end of the season. And frankly, what we saw was a great opportunity to actually modernize that game mechanic, where what you knew was millennial sports fans couldn't wait a whole season. And so we created something that you could do in a day. And it's been something that's taken off over the last 10 years, really.
And this is something, just even taking it a step further, for, again, Mom, love you. You don't have to root for the White Sox. You can pick your favorite players from the White Sox and the Cubs, if anybody has favorite players from each of those teams. I don't know if that's even a thing, but you can pick your team.
Yeah.
You can make your choices.
You're building your own team. You are your own manager.
Now, what are you looking to get from the state of Illinois?
So what we do and the way we look at our business is we make sports more exciting. We are a business that is entirely around taking something that people love in sports and creating innovative technology products around that. And that's so what we do here. And with sports betting, what we see is a phenomenal opportunity to expand what we do today into a much bigger marketplace. You know, the illegal market for sports betting is somewhere between $150 and $450 billion of handle a year. And frankly, our experience in New Jersey would tell us it's on the upper end of that. And what we see is this huge opportunity for Illinois to, frankly, legalize sports betting, bring that offshore business onshore, generate tax revenue from something that's already going on today. And what we're looking to do is just offer a product that we think, frankly, is the best product in the marketplace to sports fans so they can do that.
So how is it going on now if it isn't yet legal? You need action from the state, and yet this is happening.
So
That doesn't match up.
So I'll give you an anecdote with how it happened. So I was actually sitting at the Athenian Room probably 2 or 3 weeks ago, the day of the Kentucky Derby. It was about 10 o'clock at night. And my wife and I are sitting there, and we're next to a table about 10 guys, and they're all talking about the Kentucky Derby and whether they won or they lost. And really, they all lost, just given how the way that race went down. And of course, I couldn't resist. So I said, so how'd you guys bet today? Because it's legal to bet on online horse racing in Illinois. And they gave me the names of 5 offshore sports books that they used. None of them actually done it legally. They'd all used offshore sports books, and they're offshore sports books that you can access in a couple minutes. And the reality is they don't have age restrictions. They don't really have any laws governing them. They don't pay any tax. They don't have any worries about game integrity or the issues that are out there, but people can access them. And so that's how they do them.
So is Illinois, any state, already too late?
No. I mean, because I think what you see is, and this is a personal belief, but I think most people don't like to break the law, right? The reality is they like to bet on sports more than they don't like to break the law. But I think if you offer them a legal product that has an appropriate tax rate in the sense that you can offer competitive pricing to the illegal sports books, I think people will want to do it legally. The other thing that you can do legally is just things like payments are a lot more secure. So I don't know if there's any kind of Barstool sports fans out there, but yeah, there was Dave Portnoy had a little bit of a conflict with one of the offshore sports books over some of the things. And he went on a rant, and it triggered a lot of listener feedback for Barstool. And it was just an amazing display of all the challenges you see with the illegal sports books. People weren't getting paid. People had horrible experiences. But that's the reality of when you have a ubiquitous marketplace that's not regulated and just kind of is pushed into the dark.
And so I've got to ask, did you place any bets on the Derby?
Nope.
No?
I mean, I did on our own app. So we offer a legal app, but I did so. But I do not bet illegally.
Did you win?
I did not.
Bummer. a Derby fan, but I don't do the betting personally. Just throwing that out there. Again, reminder, folks, you can give us your input and questions, 312-981-7200 on Twitter at Sunday Spin. Also can text us at the number that I just gave, 312-981-7200. Matt King, the CEO of FanDuel, looking to get in on the action as Illinois looks to do sports betting. More after this. Good morning. Rounding out Sunday Spin, Amanda Vinicky in the host chair for this week while Rick Pearson is being one awesome nephew to an 80-year-old uncle. So happy birthday to Uncle, I don't know if it's Pearson or who. Regardless, joined now by Matt King, the CEO of FanDuel, one of the big companies in the daily sports fantasy business, as Illinois is looking to legalize sports betting. Kind of got to this question earlier, Matt, but again, so right now, sports betting is not legal in Illinois.
Yep.
And in fact, there was an Illinois Attorney General opinion that spelled out, particularly for fantasy sports, that that was the case. And yet, people still do it. So what would legalization change for your operations, or more importantly, for players?
Yeah. So you talked about two different things there, and I want to pull them apart. So there was an AG opinion a couple years back about fantasy sports. And what fantasy sports are is a game of skill. So basically, the way the prizes and the entry fees work, the way the actual games work, is very different than sports betting. So think about it as, and you were describing it earlier, fantasy sports is about picking a fantasy team of players from multiple teams and then having the outcome of the contest determined by how that team does. That's very different than sports betting, which is typically, hey, here is, I'm choosing which team is going to win, and is much more of a traditional kind of gambling game mechanic. And so, you know, fantasy sports, from our perspective, is legal in Illinois. It's a game of skill. Games of skill are allowed in Illinois. Sports betting has a much more, is a much bigger business, much bigger industry, and was historically outlawed by the U.S. government. And then consequently, no states had enabling legislation about it. And so with the Supreme Court decision knocking down the national law, states are looking to legalize it now. And so that's the distinction there. And what people are able to do in sports betting today is just use the offshore guys or illegal means of doing it.
But you are looking for the state to do what for your company?
So we're looking from our perspective to have the state pass a law that's a smart law about that legalizes sports betting. And so we can expand our business here.
More than just fantasy sports.
More than
but
just fantasy.
Including that.
Including fantasy sports. But from our perspective, the fantasy sports element of the bill is simply clarifying what we believe is already very strong case law out there. And the more important thing is actually to be in a place where we can operate a legal sports book. And the reason that we want to do that is because we see it as a huge opportunity to invest in the economy, to frankly generate some tax revenues for the states, and to create an experience that sports fans love.
There are various proposals that are out there right now. As we talked about just a bit ago, there's less than 2 weeks left in the legislative spring session. Governor J.B. Pritzker's banking on some $200 million through legalized sports betting for his budget proposal. And yet, of course, the discussion has broadened beyond sports betting, beyond fantasy sports, including the possibility of a casino, including in Chicago. Part of that discussion, one of these measures would effectively say that anyone who's operated legally thus far wouldn't be able to get in on the opening end of sports betting, that you'd have to sort of take a timeout. Would FanDuel be part of that under that?
So let's be clear what that issue is about. That issue is about a single individual who has a vested interest in Rivers Casino attempting to profit for himself at the expense of the state. He is not making any argument about whether or not we've operated illegally or legally. What he's trying to simply make an argument about is how does he keep us out, because he knows that we're going to invest more
than he will. We're going to invest more in the economy. We're going to invest more in the product. And we have a product that people like more than his. And consequently, he feels like he's going to be at a disadvantage competitively. And so what he's trying to engage is he's trying to legislate an anti-competitive marketplace that benefits himself at Illinois' expense.
As written, do you believe that that proposal would cut FanDuel?
I've seen a bunch of different versions about it, so it'll depend on what the final language is.
Fair enough. They would say that it's not fair that you have a leg up on customers, a built-in customer base.
So I disagree with that. I also think, you know, that, you know, Rivers Casino has its own casino out in O'Hare. You know, they've been operating in the market as well. So, you know, they have a big business. If you look at New Jersey as an example, Rivers Casino operates an online product there, as do we. We both started at the exact same time. And, you know, on the casino side, and then when we launched sports betting, we both launched it around the same time. And we've built a significantly bigger business than they have in New Jersey. We outcompeted them. We built a better product than they did. We invested more in the local economy than they did. And, you know, we've built a bigger business than they did. And so they saw that experience in New Jersey when they realized that competing with us, you know, from the exact same standing start, they weren't able to compete, that they're trying to use their legislative muscle to create an anti-competitive market here. And it'll be at Illinois' expense. We pay, because we make most of the investment, we pay most of the tax. And so if Illinois actually wants to generate the tax revenue that it's J.B. Pritzker is looking for, they need us in the marketplace. And so, you know, if you do what they're asking for, not only are you going to hurt the Illinois sports betting experience, but you're also going to hurt the state of Illinois, and it's only going to inure to the benefit of somebody who's already very wealthy.
What sort of tax rate would be appropriate if Illinois is looking to make money, and yet you, I think, have argued you can't make it so much that people will instead just stick with the black market? What sort of tax rate's appropriate?
I think you're looking at a mid-teens tax rate with an upfront licensing fee. I
mean, you think that's fair?
I think it's totally fair.
What about the limitations that could be there on games? Does Illinois need to allow people to place bets on, I don't know, how well or poorly a pitcher does, let's say, in today's Sox game? Or how you can't just, there's a lot of talk. It wouldn't necessarily just be, does a team win or lose?
Yeah. So I think this goes to, you have to create a better experience than the illegal markets. And so if you talk about like player props and other things, those are markets where they are very attractive to the users. But, you know, we're partners with the NHL, the NBA. We're very close to the MLB as well. We work with them on what do they like, what do they not like. And so whether or not it's in legislation or not, we're going to be working with the leagues to make sure we're delivering a product that they view to be an enhancement of the fan experience. And we think that that's very important. But, you know, these are things that I think are hard to legislate. And so, you know, what we've seen in other markets is this is a place where you actually also just want to engage, as opposed to writing into the law, you just work with the Gaming Commission to figure out what's right and what's wrong. Because there's not everything needs to be written in the law, because you have a very strong regulator here in the marketplace.
What about collegiate sports? From what I'm hearing, it seems like Illinois will not tolerate any sort of betting on college games.
So I think that this is one which is obviously there are strong voices on both sides. You know, I would tell you very strongly that if you want to put the illegal market out of business, you need some level of betting on college sports. I think there are some states that have done some pretty constructive things around potentially no in-game player props for college, which I think, again, are reasonable things to do.
Explain what that means.
That would be if you have a player, you can't bet on how much the quarterback in a college game, how many yards he's going to throw for. And so nothing that's player specific during the game. And so I think there are ways to get to the underlying concerns of the collegiate association while still keeping a market that's going to be competitive relative to the offshore books, because it is a balance. And if you veer too far one way or the other, you'll either disenfranchise a stakeholder in the colleges, or the other thing that you'll do is you will keep the illegal market in business. The other aspect of it that's important to keep in mind is, because sports betting is such a big part of the kind of sports experience, you need to be careful about not doing anything as it relates to college that would actually restrict Illinois' ability to actually pursue things like hosting the March Madness tournament. Because if you say, hey, no, you can't do X on college events that occur in the state. In all likelihood, you'll put Chicago out of the running for the March Madness tournament because there'll be such a limitation on what can happen around sports betting.
So these are the sort of things that you're telling legislators mm-hmm. as they look to craft the yeah. bill. Do they need to hurry up and get this done? Because on one hand, there seems to be a hurry.
Yep.
Other states have already gone forward and moved this. And again, it's the issue of the black market. And at the same time, there's a limitation that you can't. An Illinois resident, no matter what, shouldn't be able to do this in Wisconsin. We're talking very state-specific programs.
So Iowa and Indiana passed laws. They've both said that they actually want to be in the market by football season. So I think you will see a lot more traffic around the Iowa and Indiana border if you have a world where Illinois hasn't passed something. And I'm optimistic. I think that there's a lot of interest. When I'm in Springfield, the common theme that I hear from people is they understand this is a great opportunity to generate tax revenue. They also understand that it's something that their users, that their residents and constituents want. Frankly, they also understand that their residents and constituents want FanDuel and DraftKings in the marketplace because that's their preferred brand. And I think from what I've heard, there's a lot of smart proposals on the table. So I think they can get it done. I think they can get it done quickly.
So if you're placing a bet, the bet is that it is a go. Matt King, the CEO of FanDuel, before he goes, he is our in-studio guest and therefore has the privilege of taking a bite of the Chicago Sunrise, a.k.a. Grapefruit Malort Pie. Do-do-do.